Welcome back, New Talkers, to the Bob Davis Podcast. Podcast 636, live from a truck stop in Norman, Oklahoma. It has been a great day because one of the things I wanted to do as a cap to the Storm Chasing podcast was to go to the National Weather Service. And as you'll hear in this podcast, I did a sort of an end run and tried to get into the radar operations center. And then I got a chance to talk to Kelly Pirtle, who is the public affairs officer, public information officer for the National Weather Service. And then a great conversation with warning coordination meteorologist at the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Patrick Marsh. So this is a podcast for weather geeks because you're going to find out how they assemble and what they do at this National Weather Service Center where virtually all of the weather forecasts that you hear come. So we're going to do that in podcast 636. Well, it's summer, and summer is usually summer celebrations and client appreciation and corporate team building events. Sometimes those events are weather dependent, and so you want to try to schedule them at places where you're not going to be weather dependent. And so I want to mention Brush Studio. Brush Studio is a great new and fun thing to do, whether it is a date night, a family party, a business client appreciation event, or a corporate team building event with your family, as I said, or just friends to have a good time out at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park. Now, you should know by now, and I can tell you that an artist guides you and your team and your people through painting a picture, believe it or not, a real painting, and it is something you can hang on your walls at home or at work. You're going to want to. It's something to be proud of, but it's a really good time, and that's the main thing, and it's important also to remember that a night spent at Brush is going to be great. They got 22 brands of beer, an extensive wine collection, catering from Crave in the West End. They are event planning ninjas at Brush Studio. You're going to have a good time. So date night, client appreciation events, corporate team building, family, friends night out. They're going to be great at Brush Studio West End in St. Louis Park, where there's plenty of parking. Here's what you do. Sign up online at brushstudio.net or reach out to Brush Studio at 952-236 1700. That's 952-236-1700, Brush Studio or brushstudio.net. By the way, if you click on the banner at the top of the page, the bobdavispodcasts.com, then that will take you to brushstudio.net and you can sign up. Well, you can certainly hear the roar of all these trucks, and as I've been saying on the YouTube channel and the videos, you know, one of the cool things I like about staying at truck stops is I just love all these trucks. There's so many cool trucks. But I'll tell you something else about riding on America's back roads. You also see a lot of motorcycles, and I love seeing people out riding, and of course, it's summer now, so people are going to be riding, and if you ride, you know how important it is to be seen, and so I want you to check out 03D.com along those lines, CIRO3D.com. This is the great motorcycle products and accessories company, especially emphasizing the lighting options and solutions from the shock and awe lighting system to the really great beveled LED front headlights that also illuminate to the side of the cowling, which really helps you at night. So the lighting options are safe, they're really important, and great solutions, especially if you get the rear lighting for people that are going to be riding with you. Happy spring, happy summer, ride safe from CIRO3D.com, CIRO3D.com, or click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. So from this perspective, I'm going to rewind a little bit and take you through my day, starting with getting kicked out of the radar control center in Norman, which is on an airfield, and I didn't realize that it was a secure facility. So we're going to start there in podcast 636. Well, wouldn't you know, I come down here to Storm Chase, and there has not been a cloud in the sky for 2 days since the storms in Missouri. And I have been all over Kansas and all over Oklahoma, pretty much, anything east of Oklahoma City. So the plan is to visit the National Weather Service Radar Control Center, where they do all this analysis and prediction, in Norman, and see if I can get an interview and just get in and talk to those guys a little bit. So that is the plan for today. And then depending on what happens there, after that, I'm out. I'm heading east to Arkansas and the second part of this trip, and I'll tell you all about that when I get on the road for that. But that's the plan as we speak.
Pull on the door, please.
How you doing? I am, I made an interview request via the website and never heard from anybody. And I've been talking to storm chasers. I'm a podcaster and I'm driving all over the country talking to these storm chasers, and they all said I have to come here. So, it's a little... Yeah, well, it's the radar operations center that they're interested in. Well, is there somebody I can talk to? It's just be very brief. Well, no, I'm not talking about... I want to talk about what they do, not necessarily storm chasers.
Are you a contractor?
What does that mean?
You do contracts with the government?
No. Okay. Well, that's too bad. Thank you. Sorry. Well, I can't get out now. Now you can't get rid of me. Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that I certainly have learned the art of persistence in all the years that I've been doing talk radio and doing reporting and also just radio in general, and you just can't quit. And once I finally called the right people and got things squared away, I was able to score an interview with Kelly at the National Weather Service and Patrick. And so if you're a weather geek, get ready, because you're going to find out a lot of stuff about how they put together these forecasts. And this place where I'm going next is the place where virtually all of the forecasts come, and that is in Norman, Oklahoma. Well, I'm pleased to report that I am going to get into the National Weather Service, just a different building, and I'm going to speak to a public information officer rather than getting into the radar center, so that'll be something that I will have to work toward at some later date. But we're going to get the kind of information that the storm chasers are interested in, and it'll give you a little bit of a background on what this is all about. And thanks to Kelly Pirtle at the National Weather Service in Norman, Oklahoma, for arranging all this. She's the public information officer, so we went through the right channels, and it just shows that when you are persistent, sometimes you can, you know, get something on short notice. So all is well.
Bob.
Are you Kelly?
Yes. Hi.
Bob Davis.
Yes, it's a pleasure.
Good to meet you.
Yeah, welcome. You made it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Patrick Marsh is available.
Okay, good.
But he's only available till like 3:45 or so. That's why I was like, how fast can you
okay,
get here?
I'm,
but that should be enough,
good?
I think. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
You've checked in, so let's go upstairs.
Yeah, okay.
So, and then you can wander around the atrium a little bit if you want. So I'll be around a bit.
I'm doing a podcast about storm chasing, and
yeah.
So all of this is relevant,
right.
And it's not meant to be critical or anything
yeah.
weird like that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's funny stuff in there, like me trying to get into the radar
operations,
you know, which is hilarious, and it's classic me, because that's what I would do.
Right.
I mean, I've been doing that kind of stuff since I was 12.
Yeah. Well, it's not that they have anything to hide, it's
right.
just they don't have a lot of visitors, because their job is to keep the radars running. Did they tell you that?
No, they just said, you can leave now.
well, let me tell you a little bit about the Radar Operations Center is unique in that it's supported by, it's tri-agency. It's supported by the National Weather Service and NOAA, our parent organization, the FAA, and the Department of Defense, because all three of those operate the same NEXRAD radar.
Right.
And so it's good government at work combining their resources into one operations center that has the engineers and a hotline to help keep the radars running.
Working so that we can use them if
so
we need
to. So that we can
to.
Use them. They run at least 96% of the time all across the country.
Well, what was cool is there were guys going back and forth between the different buildings.
Yeah,
too.
And
like
they also
out there all the time.
And
the other
what
place.
People also may not realize about the radars number one, they're second to none in the world, and number two, that they have been continuously updated for the 20 years that they've been in existence. Wow. So it's not... It's like maybe having the same car, but you've replaced a lot of parts and gotten, a new engine or a new aircraft. Yeah, you hear that all the time.
I mean, there's planes we're flying on that are older than us, and we don't even know it because they're rebuilt all the
time. Right, and so the radars are the same thing. They're right now going through a major upgrade, actually. They had a major upgrade a couple years ago, adding new technology called dual polarization technology that helps it scan a slightly different way and sees more stuff.
When did they put the radar stuff in Norman?
Doppler radar for weather was developed and tested at the National Severe Storms Lab in Norman.
Okay.
And then that technology was adopted by the Weather Service, the FAA, the Department of Defense, and installed all over the country in the early 90s.
So that's why it's all out there.
So they have the Radar Operations Center.
Place.
Once it was, so Severe Storms Lab was here. Severe Storms Lab came here because... people at the precursor to the Storm Prediction Center were in Kansas City. Severe weather forecasters for the National Weather Service were in Kansas City, Weather Bureau at the time, and they wanted to study storms, so they would come to Norman in the spring, and one of the things they liked to do was take airplanes and fly them into thunderstorms. It was armored airplanes.
Sure.
And so they needed an airport, and so Norman had an airport with some empty buildings around because it had been a World War II naval air station training pilots.
They still have the OU still has a flight school over there, yeah?
Yeah, it's a good flight school. Yeah, so the airport's still there.
Yeah.
But that's when, so these people, severe weather forecasters, came down in the spring to study severe weather, and then that's how the severe storms
and Oklahoma
lab was born.
Is so great that...
Because you can see far, can't you?
Well, I love this state, but, I mean, do you live in Norman?
Yeah, I'm from Oklahoma.
How do you like Norman?
I love Norman.
Yeah, it's a cool town.
Yeah, it's home. It's a great town with the university and all the opportunities.
And I love that whole facility over there. It's just, there's so many buildings and they're all, you know,
well,
it's
really cool. Have a great building here at the National Weather Center.
Building.
Yeah, and we're fortunate because it's such a good, it's built for collaboration. We have the University of Oklahoma School of Meteorology, university researchers, the Oklahoma Climatological Survey, which has the Mesonet, and then all of our NOAA units are half the building. So we have here the National Severe Storms Lab, which is research, severe weather research. We have the Storm Prediction Center, which is severe weather forecasting for the nation, part of the National Weather Service. Then we also have the local forecast office for the National Weather Service here that covers central and western Oklahoma. We have the Warning Decision Training Division that trains forecasters from across the country. And then we have the Radar Operations Center that supports the radars all over the country and around the world.
Wow.
And, oh, look, today might be some weather in Kansas.
That's, I was just there.
The forecast for severe weather.
Wherever I go, the weather goes away. I went to Kansas. I went there for another reason, but I went to Kansas because I was down in the northeastern. First I was in Missouri, then I came to the northeastern corner of Oklahoma. And then I had to go up to Kansas briefly, and not a cloud in the sky. So I thought, oh, I'll go down to Oklahoma. You know, there's always something. Nothing. There hasn't been a cloud in the sky since I got here, like yesterday.
Oh, well.
With, a couple of clouds here and there, but nothing.
Stick around.
So where's the storms?
Stick around, it'll change. That's what we always say.
Right, but you got to absorb.
Oh, I absorbed a lot. I've been here 18 years.
Right, so you've absorbed a ton of weather information.
Yes.
Over the years.
They have, those were watches, I think, for, like in Wichita, Kansas. It goes from screen to screen. It was on a previous screen, but that's where they expect storms today. So that's one of our products. So.
Well, I love your products. I've been using your products for a long time. In fact, I remember when they, believe it or not, I actually remember I was working in radio when they developed the Doppler.
And
we got a monitor in a rack behind the board, and you could push the buttons, and, and we loved it. It was great because you didn't have to rely on the TV weather guy to call and tell you what was going on.
Right, you could monitor what was happening.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of the research we're doing right now at the Severe Storms Lab, in conjunction with the Storm Prediction Center and the Forecast Office, is looking at new ways to communicate weather information as well as how to forecast it.
You know, as I sit here at this truck stop and I see all these trucks, they are loaded with products. And I'll tell you, when you travel, you see these huge trains going 70 miles an hour through America's rural emptiness, filled with products, and a lot of them made overseas. And of course, in the news these days, especially in relation to, let me shut the door here so mosquitoes don't get in, especially in relation to the president in Germany and the whole thing with China, we're hearing a lot of talk about foreign manufacturing and concern about bringing production back to the United States. Some companies have already done it. Some companies are preparing to bring at least some of their manufacturing back to the United States. As I have said, there are reasons to manufacture in the United States, especially with very sensitive electronic products, things that are difficult to manufacture. If you are considering, if you're in the decision chain of a company and you're considering American manufacturing, please remember Depot Star in Minnesota, DEPOT, Depot Star American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. I can tell you all kinds of things about the CNC machines and the design team and the engineering capabilities at Depot Star, but you should just go to their website and check it out. DepotStar.com, D-E-P-O-T, DepotStar.com. So next, for you weather geeks, this is really, really good information, because this is going to be Patrick Marsh we're going to talk to here shortly, who is the warning coordination meteorologist here at the Storm Prediction Center in Norman. And he can provide a lot of detailed information about what the Storm Prediction Center does, how it works, how they deal with weather events, especially when they're national, and what those products are. Very quickly, I want to say it's important. The National Weather Service does not have a position on storm chasing. One of the things I wanted to ask is, because so many people are doing this, there's been accidents and other issues, car accidents with people chasing storms and a couple of different times. And it's an issue that they really won't comment on, but Patrick does have some cautionary information at the end of the interview that you should stay tuned for if you're a weather geek, because he gets into how unpredictable it can be, and you heard a little of that in podcast 634 with Stephen Coy when he was talking about how unpredictable it is, and you can hear it when we're actually in the shack in the barn there while the storm is coming in, because it turned out later that there was in fact a tornado in that vicinity while we were in the barn. So bad things could have happened. Fortunately, they didn't, but it's unpredictable and you can't always see it. So listen carefully at the end for Patrick's comments on that. But they are not comments specifically about storm chasing or storm chasers, because as I said, the National Weather Service doesn't have a position on that. Here's Patrick.
So at the Storm Prediction Center, we have two main areas of responsibility. One is on the severe weather side, hence the name Storm Prediction Center. But we also do some on the fire weather side. And the reason for that is severe thunderstorms, you got to have a thunderstorm. On the fire side, most wildfires are actually caused by lightning, and so that's kind of our tie-in to the fire community. But for storm chasers in particular, the severe weather... Our products that relating to severe weather are what are most interest. And generally speaking, all of our products, storm chasers would probably find useful. We start with the convective outlooks, which are CONUS, or United States scale forecasts that convey where we are anticipating severe thunderstorms to occur up to 8 days into the future. And as we get closer to an event, our forecasts are updated more frequently. Days 3 through 8 are only updated once per day. We do our day 2 forecast twice a day, and we do our current day forecast 5 times a day. And this is basically where you would expect our forecast of where severe thunderstorms would occur. Now, on the day 1 forecast, we include probabilities of things such as tornadoes, hail, and wind.
So it's getting much more specific.
It's much more specific. In the general, it's just generally speaking, or excuse me, in the extended, so days 2 through 8, we keep it general and say, this is what we're expecting in terms of, they're severe. But on day 1, we break it down into the individual hazards and say, this is our forecast for probability of tornado, probability of large hail, and probability of thunderstorm winds.
Now, the thing that's interesting to me, I found these a lot of the chasers, even the most basic guys, have access to these pretty amazing tools. I think it's RadarScope yes. and others that allow them. So where does that information, where is that drawn from? Just the radar, the local radar? Or?
So the Weather Service operates a network of well over 100 weather radars. I don't know the number off the top of my head. But they originally were roughly located once, one per forecast office, and then additionals have been added. There's some with some Federal Aviation Administration radars. There are some Department of Defense radars as well, in addition to the Weather Service, and they all comprise what's known as the NEXRAD network. And so that all of that radar information is generated locally. It goes to the WFO and gets disseminated back and archived. And there's an initiative now with Amazon, actually, where all of the radar data is archived in the cloud, and you can access it through Amazon S3 for free.
So you could
free.
Always run your own models like these guys in the other room are doing.
If you wanted to use it to initialize your models, or you wanted to go back and just do a case study on an event, all the radar data is available for free in the cloud. You just have to know where to go point and download it from.
So where does an app get all that information? Do they have an arrangement with you, or do they just pull it?
So it wouldn't go through us. The Weather Service actually has a handful of dedicated suppliers. I don't remember how many there are. I believe the University of Oklahoma is one of the dedicated suppliers. And so if you want the highest resolution radar feeds, you have to contract out with one of these providers. Now, universities have access to some of the data for free. I believe Iowa State actually makes the entire high-resolution radar data available for free. Or you have to go through one of these private companies, as I mentioned. But an interesting thing, when the radar network was built, the part of the stipulation was this was paid for by taxpayer dollars, and so the radar data should be made available free, which is why in the United States, you don't pay for the radar data. If you're a private company, you want access to the radar data, you don't pay for the data. You pay for dropping the equipment to be able to access the data. All of our model data, and as well, not just necessarily the radar data, is also made publicly available. And one of our models, the Global Forecast System, actually runs and produces forecasts for the entire globe. So if you wanted to see what the GFS model is forecasting for in India, you just download the data and you can look at it for free.
Now, we're looking into a room here that has many, many monitors. And then, of course, 1, 2, 3, 4 big, those are the four main monitors. Then over here, there's like a thing that says 2044, which is obviously it's not 8 p.m. So what does that mean?
All right. So in the meteorological community, we operate on what is known as Universal Coordinated Time, or UTC. And it's basically the time along the prime meridian, which runs through London and parts of France. And the reason for that is weather does not stop at geographical bounds or political bounds.
How dare it?
I know. It would be so much easier if it did. But because it's across the world, and we want to be able to communicate with our colleagues in Europe or in Asia, and we need a baseline time to communicate from. And if we want to coordinate the launch of what we call radiosondes or balloons that take temperature and pressure and humidity measurements in the atmosphere. We want to coordinate it so that they all go up at the same time. We need a common time. And so the meteorological community has adopted the Universal Time Coordinated. And so 2045 is the time. It's 8:45
in London.
In more or less London. So translating that to our time, in Central Daylight Time, you would subtract 5 hours from that. In winter, you would subtract 6, and you'd get our local time in 24-hour time.
So let's suppose that there was a big event going on. I know that they're saying Wichita is under a watch, but let's suppose that there was a really big weather event, you know, a string of storms or whatever. Would there be a lot more action in that room at that point?
Okay, so a real good example is this. A couple days ago, we had a big severe weather event on Saturday, May 27th. And I actually was fortunate enough to be here and to work it, so I can first.
I was actually under a gas station thing while the hail.
There you
was
go. There you go. In fact,
in Oklahoma, as a matter of fact.
Just a couple of miles south of the building, we had 4-inch hail falling.
Yeah,
and so you can imagine at some point in the evening, we were all like, "Is that going to hit our cars?"
Well, I mean, as soon as, and you know this because you live in Oklahoma, as soon as that hail comes down, people head for any kind of overhang they can.
Overpasses, and so as you see right now on a relatively quiet day in the grand scheme of things, we have four people here on the severe weather desk. on that night, which was one of the busiest that we've had, I came in as an extra person. We only had 5 people working. And the reason for that is we do this every day. We're pretty good at what we do. We all know what our responsibilities, and kind of like to use a football analogy, we stay in our lanes. We can pretty much keep it covered. It is possible, and sometimes on bigger events, we'll bring in someone. Like I came in on Saturday, and I think on the busiest day, and on one of the busiest days in SBC's history, I think we had 6 people in.
What are they doing?
The hard part definitely is the predicting it, and then as you get into the day, we're doing things such as issuing the severe thunderstorm and tornado watches. We write mesoscale discussions that are kind of a little bit longer fuse products, shorter fuse products that discuss kind of what our current thinking on how things are going to evolve. And then we also had the convective outlooks that were being issued as well. On that particular event, one of the things that we were doing is we issued quite a few watches. I think it was 15 watches, which is big, which is a busy day. It's a very busy day. And on the evening shift, the 4 p.m. to midnight shift, the lead forecaster issued 11 watches. The previous most that he had ever issued on a shift was 7.
Wow.
That'll give you an idea of how busy it was. So we had one person who was coordinating the watches. Issuing the watches. We had 2 people who were focused on sub areas of the country. And you can kind of think of it as this: when a lead forecaster has to go in and issue a watch, he's kind of got to tune everything out and focus only on that. And so that's what the lead does. But the weather doesn't stop. And so the mesoscale and the mesoscale assistant forecasters, they're looking at the rest of the country and monitoring it and providing input to the lead. So when the watch is finally issued and the lead turns back around and can say, what's next? Bring me back up to speed.
Right.
So that's what these 2 guys are doing. And one of the ways that, in addition to briefing the lead, we brief other forecast offices and the public by issuing these mesoscale discussions. So that's what these 3 of the 4 guys were doing. But we also got to do the predictions for the day 1, day 2, day 3, and et cetera. And so we have somebody working on the extended, the convective outlook forecast as well. And so that's kind of what we were doing.
And, you know, it's so funny because I asked one of the storm chasers, what's so cool about this? And he said, because the reality is it's unpredictable.
Oh, yeah. It's very much so. If you spend any amount of time on the forecast desk of the Storm Prediction Center, you will have a busted forecast. The atmosphere will humble you multiple times a year. multiple times a week, it seems like. I know personally for me, a couple weeks ago, I was doing a forecast, and I was like, there could be a pretty big wind or hail threat up in the Colorado area. So we put it down. I put the forecast out, and I was forecasting it. And I thought maybe it'd be a little bit more wind threat than hail threat, but we'll see. And then it ended up being softball-sized hail in Denver.
You know, the thing is, 100 years ago, you had no idea it was coming. You had to use your nose and your ears and your eyes.
If you consider how far we've come in 50 years, to be able to forecast severe weather and tornadoes almost a week in advance. We've come a long way as a science.
Yeah.
People seem to forget that meteorology is pretty young. We've been around since the 1800s, or late 1700s, early 1800s. But if you start thinking about things like physics and some of these other sciences, they've been around for millennia. The radar network that we use and everybody that's driving the apps on their phones, that was rolled out nationwide in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're coming up on 20 years of having this. So we're still learning an awful lot. Every day that I work the forecast desk, I learn something new. I was like, you know, I've never seen that before. That's incredible. And I've seen a lot of things. A lot of people think that when we're forecasting a moderate or a high risk, which is our the biggest of the big severe days, that it gets really chaotic in here. And those are actually some of the easier days, if you think about it, because we know that it's probably going to be the tornado. We know the area. I mean, it's a big day. A lot of the uncertainty has been removed from the equation. Now, there's still some uncertainty about how it will exactly play out, but we know that it's probably going to be a tornado event, and we know roughly the area. The days that are really taxing are the days where you have a slight risk or maybe a moderate risk over multiple parts of the country at the same time. And you're having to bounce around from Florida to the Northeast to the Northern Plains to the Southern Plains to the Great Lakes and just try to keep up with it. Those are the days that you leave here after your 8-hour shift and you've
had enough. And that's really probably during those transition periods. So
exactly. Saturday was one of those events. That was by far the busiest shift I've worked in my time here. One right after the other. We had pretty much everywhere across the Southeast in watches. We had watches going in the plains. We had stuff coming out of the mountains of Colorado that just kept coming and producing 4-inch hail at like 10 o'clock at night. That was a very busy day. There are days that are more predictable than others.
Right.
Saturday, we knew it was going to be a big event. I got called on Friday. I was told, can you come in Saturday? It's going to be widespread. It's going to be busy. We're going to need help. But then there are other days where you're like, I think this is what's going to happen. But the atmosphere is in one of those unpredictable phases, and you end up only figuring it out a couple hours before,
right.
And then you're like, okay, we're going to need to call somebody in because it's going to get really crazy really quick. From a chaser point of view, you could be on the right storm. You could be looking at where the tornado actually is occurring and never see it because rain can wrap around and as well as you just can't see the big tornado that's barreling right at you or some town. I don't want to say it's ironic, but it's interesting that we're talking on May 31st because it's the 4-year anniversary of the fatalities of three well-known researchers on tornadoes in the severe weather community that were killed in a tornado just northeast of here.
Yeah.
Northwest
yeah.
of here. And it was one of those, it was just a very large tornado that was moving at incredible speeds, and they just couldn't get out in time.
And so, they knew what they were doing.
And they knew, they were very, very, they were veteran chasers. And so in that regards, if something like that can happen to them, it can happen to anyone. It can happen to the best
right.
of us.
Right. Thanks again to Patrick Marsh and especially Kelly Pirtle and Rick. I'm just going to say Rick at the National Weather Service in Norman for really being patient with me and not having me arrested and taking the time to actually allow me to talk to some people and come up. This place is really fantastic, and you can come to the National Weather Service at Norman. And they have a public area where you can tour, and they actually have the props from the movie Twister. So they have Dorothy from the movie Twister, and then they have an actual real unit that they based Dorothy on from the movie Twister. Lots of other really cool things there in the public area at Norman. And if you're taking a road trip, you know, this summer with your family, and you guys are talking about weather and seeing the storms that you see when you're on on 35 South coming south through Kansas, and you want to stop at Norman, you know, certainly go to the website and check it out, and maybe call forward and make sure that you can get in. But it's an amazing facility. You won't be able to go up into the areas that I went into because there's all sorts of services, but it is worth seeing. And thanks again to Kelly and Patrick for taking the time to talk to me. Don't forget Brush Studio, something new and fun to do, whether it's a date night, business or corporate events, family or friends, night out. Remember, Brush Studio, West End, St. Louis Park. I mentioned how it works, and the classes are really fun. 22 brands of beer, a great wine selection, catering from Crave, and those classes do fill up. Really, I mean, you've heard the spot that I've done, and there's families there, people are having a really good time, and I think it's a great event, especially with client appreciation. You have time to spend with your clients or team building. 952-236-1700. Once again, 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. You can sign up online at brushstudio.net. All right. Thanks a lot for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com. I really recommend listening off the page, the audio stream at the BobDavisPodcast.com or iTunes. And I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. I got 2 donations, and I don't have my phone with me right now. I can't get the names, but I will do those names on future podcasts. Right now, the donations come in really handy because I need the diesel fuel as I tour the great, I don't know what you want to call this. To me, this is, well, this is the Bob Davis Podcast's summer road trip, really. There's a lot more events to come in the summer, and the second half of this trip, I think, is going to be very interesting. So stay tuned for future podcasts. Thanks for listening to Podcast 636 in Norman, Oklahoma, at a mega truck stop. I love it. Thanks for listening.